The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
In one-hour show, getting more calls from girls than if you total up all my high school years, college, and grad school. Of course, they only want to talk to me for a few minutes, which was pretty much the way it was in college. If I did get a hold of a girl, she'd say, I gotta go. We've been talking for 4 minutes. I gotta go. So I'm used to it. I'm used to the quick calls from the ladies. But if you would like to add to my total of girls calling me, and you can be a guy too, you can call me. Because the guys would call me when we do flag football games and different sports, the guys would call. But the phone calls would be very, very short. They wouldn't even go to 5 minutes. Ray, yeah. Game, yeah. When? 4. How many? 12. See ya. Good. That was it. No verbs, no adjectives necessary, and no prepositional phrases. Nothing but nouns strung together, and we knew what we were talking about. 877-573-7825, 877-57 equal is the number to call to get onto the program. If you'd like to talk for 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes, depending upon the situation, which means, of course, there's no therapy done here and no diagnoses, but we can talk a little bit, find out what's going on in your life. Maybe you say, well, obviously, this guy is not in my situation, but we can put our heads together and see if we can come up with some sort of trajectory or no trajectory. Sometimes you just can't do anything, and then you have to accept that, which is the hardest part of life, emotional, social, behavioral helplessness. 877-57 equals situation regarding kids, regarding parents, regarding spouses, regarding family, regarding life, regarding religion, or just generic type questions, something that you don't understand, what's going on out there in the culture, or something you don't understand about all these psych terms that are flung around all over the place. Now part of our everyday lexicon is psychology creeps in with all of its particular lingo. Not unusual to have your kids look around and see that the culture standards are lower than yours. That your goals as a parent, the things you want to teach, the way you approach raising kids is different than the bulk of people out there. It is. Very simple that way. If you're raising, you hope, citizens for God's kingdom, then the way you approach this is going to be sometimes rapidly out of sync with the rest of the culture. And your kids know this, and some of them don't like it. Some of them don't like it a lot. So what do you do? How do you convince them that what you're doing is not because you're bucking for Tyrant Parent of the Decade Award, but because you love them desperately? Now, I want to speak a little bit to the dads about this, because what I'm about to say comes more easily to moms, I believe. But it's very important, powerfully important, when it comes from dads. How do you express to those kids on a regular basis that you are motivated by love. Loads of love. And you're not motivated by, I'm the boss, kid, my way or the highway, punk. Well, obviously, there's many, many ways. But one of the ways is I look back on my own fatherhood. And I realize how very, very important this is. His dads in particular, moms do it, and they do it a lot, and maybe as a group they do it more than dads do it, is affection. Physical touch, hugs, kisses, love yous. I am so convinced of the power of that to get across the message that my standards are different from the culture's, but it's because I love you so very, very much. It gets harder to do when they move into their teens because the teen rules are don't embarrass me out in public. Oh, don't touch me. Don't look at me. Don't say anything. Come on. I'll just walk behind you by about 50 yards and don't turn around and look like you know me. And we have allowed the kids to dictate how much affection we're allowed to show for them, with them, to them, especially out in public. How'd that happen? One of the things that for me was critical as a dad was I did not allow my children to decide when, where, and how much I would show them affection. Not going to happen. My son Pete, my youngest son, went to St. Thomas Aquinas High School in Louisville, Ohio. His sophomore year, he played basketball. That would make him, what, 16? Before the home games, I'd perch myself somewhere up in the fourth or fifth row of the bleachers and watch the kids horse around down there on the gym floor, you know, before the game, guys doing what guys doing, snapping each other with towels, whatever. I'd wait for an opening into action, an appropriate moment, and then I'd go down. And I'd go up to Petey, I'd grab him, and I'd hug him. And then, I'd kiss him on the neck, kiss him on the cheek. And it's very important, and I've realized this as a psychologist, very important to be affirming and positive before a game like that. So I would always say, Petey, try not to stink the joint out. And he would laugh. And I asked him afterwards, I said, Pete, did it bother you when I do that? He said, would it make any difference, Dad? I said, no. No, it wouldn't. And then he told me later, a couple of his teammates came up to him and said, I wish my dad would do that. If you're not an affectionate guy, nobody's forcing you to not be affectionate. You can do that. Maybe it doesn't feel at ease, but it will feel at ease the more you do it. Sends such a powerful message to the kids, which is you got to understand, son or daughter, how very much I love you, what you mean to me in my life. And that softens the standards that you're trying to get across, the way you're enforcing things. You haven't given them a smartphone and they're 15 and they're thinking, how did I get stuck with this Neanderthal? But it's hard for them to deny all the affection coming their way. That's hard to ignore. To this day, my son, he's in his 20s. I'm going to hug him and kiss him almost every time I see him. And I'm Italian, so, you know, we hug and kiss you. You got to watch out. That could mean something to your safety. Message to the dads. It's wonderful to have high standard. It's wonderful to walk counterculturally. It is. But you have an easier time of it if they know how much you love them, and they'll know how much you love them by how much you show it.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
Within the sixth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 rules for the discernment of spirits, St. Ignatius of Loyola highlights the need for prayer when we are experiencing spiritual desolation. St. Ignatius invites us to change ourselves intensely against the desolation itself as by insisting more upon prayer. Prayer is the first step in resisting spiritual desolation. In the interior storm of spiritual desolation, this first step, when one is perhaps feeling separated from their Lord and Creator, will often need to be done with intention. This very important and decisive step can become a turning point in rejecting spiritual desolation. Father Jules Toner wrote, "The first and most essential step in changing ourselves with the hope of conquering desolation is prayer. In this context, prayer of petition. What might be your prayer of petition during spiritual desolation?"
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real-life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Eucharistic Stewardship, bringing Christ to people and people to Christ. Question: do you believe Jesus to be truly present in the Eucharist? If you are Catholic, then your answer should be a resounding yes. The pinnacle act of stewardship through our Christian faith as Catholics is to bring Christ to people and people to Christ. As Catholics, the number one way to ultimately achieve this way of life is through receiving the Eucharist. The minimum requirement of receiving Jesus through the Eucharist coincides with the third commandment: keep holy the Sabbath, and thus receiving communion at Mass. But if you want to go above and beyond what's expected, then perhaps consider making daily communion a top priority, or encourage others to make this positive change with you. The sacraments of Holy Communion and Reconciliation are two of the most powerful and transforming ways to bring you closer to the love, peace, and forgiveness of Jesus Christ. Another act of stewardship to bring one into communion with Christ might initially start by first bringing that person into the Catholic faith. Since the Eucharist is the focal point of our faith, your knowledge of the Eucharist is important. However, that's where priests in the RCI program can assist in explaining our faith and the role of the Eucharist. In summary, spend some time in prayer to discern how the Eucharist can play a greater role in a stewardship way of life for you or for someone you care. This is Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
Ultra-sensitive, post-zeros man, self-aware, connecting, sharing, emotive, Androgen American. Very nice to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Program Doctor Is In. Let's go to Molly. Molly from New York. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I called you before. I'd love to live next door to you so I can communicate more. Oh, my gosh.
How can I help you, dear?
I I'm old. I lost my eyesight. So now my sons can, I have older children, they visit to me. And I noticed this, my one daughter-in-law, you can't get a word in edgeways. She knows everything, she does everything, she did everything. And I see my son used to be, never corrected me. And it's been about 10 years they're married now. And I don't know if I could give a remark to him or would it do damage to his marriage. So do I shut up or do I speak up?
How long have they been married, Molly?
10 years, over 10, 12 years.
How often do they visit?
This is the first time since 10 years.
Oh, wait a minute. You're saying they haven't come to see you in 10 years?
No, but my son calls me every day. Well, he was working. He just retired.
So he's in his 60s.
Yeah, he had to give up his, whatever you call that, income. So then he had to work for another few years so he can retire. So he just retired.
Well, do you think that the daughter-in-law of yours doesn't really like you very much?
Oh, she hugs and kisses me and tells me, what can I do for you? Do you need this or that? But never ask me, what would I like, you know?
Wait a minute, Molly, holy, dear, I'm confused here. You said that you've only seen him once in 10 years?
Yeah, but I talk to my son every day,
You say your daughter-in-law hugs and kisses you and says, what can I do for you? How does that? I mean, she did it the one time she came to see you?
No, because she's here now. They spent a week here.
Oh, okay. So this week is the first time they've come to be with you in 10 years.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to figure.
I have no choice. We had to work.
You got to figure her personality is the way it is. And it doesn't sound like, from what you're saying, she sees anything wrong with the way she is.
No, she don't. She's perfect.
There you go.
Nasty remark. I'm sorry.
Smile, nod, listen, and don't say a thing.
Don't tell him how I feel, what I see, and...
Well, not unless you want him to not come back for another 10 years.
Well, I know my son would. She won't hold him back from them. But the only thing is I had a stroke, so I got delayed thinking. I don't know how to explain it.
Here's what I would say, Molly. When you try to point out to somebody what their personality is like, first of all, where do you begin? If she's opinionated, she thinks she's special, she can do everything better than you or everybody else, where do you even start to point that out? That's the first thing. The second thing is, you said it, she doesn't see herself as she is. So if you try to point out some things, it's likely she's going to get real defensive. She's not going to say, oh, gee, thank you. I never looked at it that way. Thanks
right,
for telling me.
Scared. It would do damage to his marriage.
I think it would. I think it would. Yeah. So what I would suggest is that for whatever the reason, she's not going to come around all that much because she probably has whatever it is. She's either occupied in her own life or they just don't seem to be able to find the time to visit mom. So given that, I think you are very smart at this point just to quietly let her talk like that. Don't challenge. Don't point it out. Don't say, you know, when you talk like that, you know what you make me feel like?
I wouldn't talk to her. I would talk to my son. I wouldn't talk to her.
Well, even if you did that, I got a feeling he knows more what she's like than you do because he lives with her. So he probably hasn't even told her what she's like because he knows better, or he doesn't think she's all that bad. So at this point, I wouldn't. If you're asking me what I would do, Molly, I would not.
No. So I hold it in.
Well, you know what, honey? You don't have to hold it in. You don't have to be bothered by it. See, people think that all the time. They think, well, I'm just going to stifle it. It's going to sit in my gut like a big stone, and I'm going to feel terrible. No. You have another option. And that option is to say to yourself, this is what she is like. This is what she's always been like since I've known her. So what is the surprise here?
That she's splitting the family apart by her, the way she is. My kids all got along, and now they because of her comments and stuff, it's...
You can't fix
like
all that, Molly.
Eggshells.
You know what, honey? You can't fix all that.
I know it.
They've got to be the ones to figure out how to either get along with her or to roll with her.
So I don't tell my son how I feel.
What would it do?
Probably make... he would defend me, and I think it... I really think it. He would open up to her, and it would cause...
I've been at this business a long time. And the more ingrained somebody's personality type is, the more they are a certain way. You're not dealing with a piece of behavior, Molly. You're not dealing with something she did one time that you want to point out to her. You're dealing with a style. You're dealing with the way she is. And when you try to correct the way somebody is, the longer they've been that way and the more pervasive they are that way, the less likely they're going to hear you. I'm not saying you just become a doormat. I'm saying you don't let it bother you.
But not to speak up.
You can, but I'm telling you, I think that the odds of something bad happening are higher than the odds of something good happening.
Yeah,
God bless you. Molly, you need peace at this point in your life. You don't need to be distressed by this.
I need you around my corner.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd yell at you. I'd say, Molly,
for you, I wish.
Cut it out.
I wish I could talk to you, call you on the phone. I'd be willing to pay so that I can talk to you on the phone because I got some more.
Well, you call back, Molly. God bless you, hon. You take good care. Do not blame yourself because these kids are doing this. They're adults now. Don't you ever put your peace in the hands of the way somebody else acts.
I could go to the grave being happy.
Well, you can. You can go to the grave being happy, but you're going to have to decide that. You can't say, I'll go to the grave being happy if somebody acts a certain way. That's almost going to guarantee you can't go to the grave being happy. Our Lord says to go to the grave being happy because you know who he is. And when you go to your grave, you're one of the very, very lucky ones that knows who Jesus is. That's a blessing.
And I thank you for the ending of your program. I love it when you say, walk with God.
Yeah,
whatever statement you give with God. Thank you so much.
All right, hon. You take care. This is Dr. Ray. The number is 877-573-7825. You know, this is the hardest part for folks. And when I wrote the book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody, is one of the themes I talked about, which is, when you have a history of somebody being a certain way and they show no signs of changing the way they are, and you're going to confront it, or you're going to point it out, or you're going to say how you think or how you feel about it, recognize that there is a decent chance they ain't going to agree with you one whit, especially the longer they've been that way. And you have to just realize, if you let it bother you, it will continue to bother you because that's who they are. And in this case, this is a relative. And that's often the way it is. You got relatives in your close family circle who are hard to take. And you want to say, I'd like to point out to them what they're like. Well, yeah, that may give you satisfaction, but at the very least, it won't do any good. And at the very worst, could open up an emotional gap.
The Call, a call from God. Father Vincent Serpa shares his experience.
It began when I was in second grade. I was preparing for my first Holy Communion, and I went to with my mother and father to see The Bells of St. Mary's, the movie with Bing Crosby and Ingrid Bergman. He was the singing pastor, and she was the sister principal of the school. And at one point in the movie, the sister was being transferred out of the school, and it was very painful for her because she thought it was because of her disagreements with the pastor, and it was really because she was ill and didn't know it. There's a scene with her kneeling before the tabernacle in the convent chapel, and I had never seen anybody pray before a tabernacle before. I'd seen them pray before statues, but at this particular time in my life, I was learning about the real presence of the Blessed Sacrament in catechism class, and it made a lot of sense to me. The other thing that moved me was that she was doing the difficult thing because she loved the Lord, and that was very impressive to me. Shortly thereafter, at the catechism class, the sister that had been teaching the boys was transferred away. And I remember when they announced, my eyes filled with tears because I thought that she was doing the difficult thing because she loved the Lord. Again, that just galvanized that whole experience that I had had. And shortly after that, I was at my grandmother's house, and I noticed a picture of St. Martin de Porres, or a statue of him. He was Blessed Martin then, in a Mary Knoll magazine. And under it said, Dominican Brother. So I came into the kitchen and I told my mother, I want to be one of those. Years later, I actually did. I became a Dominican lay brother. And then after further discernment, I decided that what the Lord was really calling me to was to be a priest, because I wanted to celebrate Mass. And that's the priest's principal function. It's what makes him a priest, is to celebrate that sacrifice. And that's what I did.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious-life.
Hey, you're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarini.
No new age stuff here. Mostly old age stuff. Real nice to have you, Dr. Ray Guarini. Before we go back to your calls, I want to continue to make a call for audience members, good Lord permitting, on October 28th and 29th, after 9 years absence with a live audience. We did a digital audience during COVID, but a live audience 9 years ago in Ann Arbor, Ave Maria Radio Turf. Russell Video will be taping 4 shows of Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show, season number 15. Boy, I don't like looking back at season number 1 because I keep thinking, that's my kid. So October 28th and 29th at 5:30 and 7:15 both nights. Got some fabulous guests. You got Marcus Peter coming in. Got Dave Vacheres. You've got Father Joe Krupp. Many of you know Father Joe. He's going to be one of our guests. So October 28th, 29th, if you would like to be in the live audience, we have limited seating. Normally, we don't have limited seating. We do. Russell Studios is only so big. So, sign up. Go to AveMariaRadio.net, and they said there's a slider. I don't know what that means, but there's a slider there, and then you can sign up for 1, 2, 3, or 4 shows in the live audience. You make the show. Bring your kids. We love having kids there. We have a psychologist on the premise in case there's an emergency brat eruption. Rose, by any other name, is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Want to encourage everybody to go to your talk. We have been on a Good News cruise with you, and so... Father Krupp is wonderful, too.
Isn't
so
he something? He is something. He'll be there Wednesday.
I will be there Wednesday?
He will. Father Joe will. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, you better be, Rose.
Well, I am a grandmother. My husband and I live with our divorced son, and he has custody of his 2 girls. And we spend most of our evening shuffling and chauffeuring, driving kids back and forth still. So I'm not sure any night ever works for us.
Bring the kids.
They're supposed to be in counseling on Wednesday.
Oh.
The girls go to counseling. Their parents are divorced, and my son has full legal custody of the girls. But they go every other weekend to their mother, and when they came home this weekend, for example, they had spent the weekend at the mother's boyfriend's house.
Mm-hmm.
And this is her second. She had another boyfriend previously, so they have a half-sister from that relationship. And we have never said anything to the girls about the immorality of the mother's lifestyle. And the oldest girl is seventh grade now, and we feel that we need to speak out. We try to avoid talking about the mother in any way because the older girl is very protective and defensive of her mother, even though she has spent almost her entire life living the majority of her life with her father. You know, when she was younger, at different times, depending on who, what the court said, the mother had varying types of visitation rights. Currently, it's every other weekend.
Well, Rose, you think this. What does Dad think?
He says the same thing. We were talking last night. We both feel that, you know, because I'm making the call because he's at work. He also feels that it's time that we address it with at least the older girl. But we don't know if this is going to ruin her relationship with him, or is it going to do more harm than good that she thinks we don't approve of her mother, which, you know, we don't approve of her mother's lifestyle. And we don't know how to approach this situation.
I'd say two things, Rose. I would say that it's up to Dad to do this.
That's what he intends to do. I said, I'll call Dr. Ray.
Then I would suggest he start out by not saying specifically what she's doing. In other words, you know, your mom is living with guys, and that's just not right. That's not morally right. No. Ask the seventh grader, what do you think about visiting your mom? What's good about it? What bothers you about it? See if she brings it up. Well, I just don't like the fact that she's got a new boyfriend and every time, and I don't like him very much. Is she living with him? Yeah. Well,
no.
What do you think? Okay.
They have
okay.
separate homes.
Okay.
But with the other one, he did live with her eventually.
Right. Well,
the first one.
Ask her questions about her assessment of the situation. See what's on her mind. Get her to say if she has any reluctance, if she has any questions, if she has any moral uneasiness about what's going on over there. That's
okay.
how
she
I would introduce.
She does go to a Catholic school.
Okay. Well, that's how I would introduce the topic.
Okay.
All right, because he's got to do a little exploring. Now, if she's going to be defensive of Mom, then for him to go straight at it and say things like, you know, your mother lives very differently than we live. We try to live according to the faith. We try to follow our Lord's way. It sounds like your mother doesn't, and that's not a good thing. Well, right away, quick, she's going to defend her mom.
Yeah, and then she takes the girls to church, and she goes to communion, too.
Mm. Oh, boy.
She has had priests over to her house for dinner over the years. She has priest friends. They'll talk about Father so-and-so and Father this and, you know.
How did your son get custody?
Initially, the original judge ordered extensive psychological testing for both of them. She was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And has never really addressed that. She's supposed to be counseling all these years and never has. My son continues with the court-ordered counseling. He was told to address anger management issues because she claims that that was his problem.
Hmm.
They did get an annulment.
I think he's got to let his daughter talk about how she sees things over there, how she sees the way her mother acts. If her mom does go to church and then does go to communion, you can't expect that little girl to understand that. She would see it and she'd say, there's nothing wrong with my mom. She goes to church, she goes to communion, she's fine. That would be my guess as to how she would interpret it. the more subtle aspect of it is, well, wait a minute now. She's having relations with this guy. She shouldn't be gone to communion. Or if she misses church half the time, then she shouldn't be gone to communion. She probably wouldn't pick up on that. So I think your son is the one to introduce the topic. And maybe through his questioning, he can get his daughter to see the differences in the way he's raising her and in the way she's raising her. Thank you, Rose. 877-573-7825. Dr. Ray, thoroughly enjoying my time with you.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master, and the Master is Jesus.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me. In this commandment, God seeks to protect us from false claims to our worship and obedience. And there's a great sad history of people who have trusted in gods other than him or things other than him and the ruin that it has caused. So God is trying to protect us and call us to an absolute trust and obedience of him. He asked us to trust him above all things and above all other people or so-called gods. We have to also avoid things like consulting horoscopes, palm reading, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums, any desire to try to control things apart from God. God simply says, trust me, I'm the Lord your God. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Don't run away from the radio or turn it off too fast. Your IQ has been pushed up in the last many minutes that you've been listening, and you will get intellectual bends. A dangerous buildup of IQ points that if you just simply walk away from the radio too quickly, you'll feel it. Brian, California. Hello, Brian.
Hi.
Hey, I've been looking at your summary here, Brian, and I got you. There's good news and bad news. Which do you want first?
The good news.
Okay. In most cases where you got an 8-year-old who is difficult, pushes back, stubborn, in most cases that can be dramatically improved by changes in the parenting.
Okay. Good news.
That is the good news. Of course it is. Because you don't want to think, well, that's just my kid. He's that way. No matter what you do, not going to change. It's who he is. Yeah, he may have a certain aspect to his personality where he pushes. Do you have other kids?
Yeah, we have a 6-year-old and then a 8-month-old.
Okay. So he may push harder than the 6-year-old. A couple of reasons. Maybe just who he is and his temperament. Or he's just older. Now, when you say he's difficult, what's he do?
Well, I'll give you an example. Last night, we had, he had drum lessons, and he did a half hour lesson, and then his brother does half hour on guitar after that. And after his 30 minutes, the teacher gave him some candy. It's a couple of Reese's pieces, two pieces. And, you know, it was 8 o'clock at night later lesson. So I said, okay, have one and, you know, save the other one for tomorrow. And he lost it. He started crying and we were in the room with just the teacher and my other son, and he was quiet about it, but he was crying, pushing up on me and wanted to talk to me outside. So we go outside and he just kind of starts getting louder, and it's just,
so he's throwing a fit.
And it happens. This is a regular occurrence of.
So when he did that, when he did that, Brian, what did you do about it?
I tried to stay as calm as I could, and but here's the thing. He slowly started opening up the second piece, and I said, "If you eat that, there's going to be some consequences." And he slowly started opening it, take a look of it, says, "It's your choice. If you eat it, there'll be consequences for your actions." And he slowly ate it while I was watching, and he totally knew that I was, you know, there would be something, a consequence if he did it, and he did it anyways. And then I told him that the consequence, he was going to hang out with a friend on Friday, and I said, you know, he can't go. And so that's when he lost it again.
Okay. Well, the good news again, I am really not at all bothered by what your son did, because listening between the lines, it sounds like he's got you a bit confused, like you're not sure to handle him. Let me just give you an example. Okay, so he wants the candy, and he wants it now. Now, at that point, if he's starting to throw this little eruption because he couldn't get the second piece is gone. That's it. It's gone. He doesn't keep it. It's gone. That's the first thing. Second thing, he was rude. I mean, he made you leave, and he created a scene. That's rude. Very rude. So, when he goes home, he goes straight to bed, and tomorrow he has no privileges whatsoever. Three, when you said, if you eat that, there's going to be consequences. Well, he basically said, in your face, or in my mouth, because he's going to eat it right in front of you. Now, what I'll tell you this tells me, Brian, and this is why it's good news. This tells me that your little 8-year-old guy, for whatever the reason, and I don't know your family dynamics. If you were in therapy with me, we could explore them at great length. But this tells me he does not respect your authority. You said there's going to be consequences. He looked at you like, yes, yeah, so what? Basically.
Yeah.
So what you could have done is you could have said, well, now I'm going to tell you, son, I don't know when you'll be able to eat candy again. It's going to be a while. It's going to be quite a while because of what you just did. So in other words, you made it very expensive for him to say, in your face, Dad, because that's really what that was. It wasn't a, I'm going to sneak an extra piece of candy because I'm not allowed to have candy, so I'll wait until you're in bed, Dad, and then I'm going to eat my candy. No, no, no. It was a look you dead in the eye and go, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And at that point, you can make a couple of conclusions. One, he's looking at you like, I know the game here. I know this, right? Now, I'm not saying your kid's bad at all. I'm just simply saying he's probably doing what he's learned over time, which is push on Dad, and the consequences will not be that great, and they really won't be something I can count on all the time. Well, what he did, for example, what I would do is, first of all, when he goes back to his teacher, he's going to, if he's capable, he's going to write a little apology. If he's not capable, he's going to copy one.
Good.
He's going to apologize to the teacher for doing that, and he's going to say, I won't do it again, ever again. And three, in the meantime, he ain't getting any candy. Now, in other words, what you're doing is you're saying, you know, son, it's very expensive for you to throw a major league fit like that when you're 8 years old. You're not two, you're eight. That's the message you're sending, which is I'm going to do what I got to do here. So that's the good news, because the good news is, I think if you approach this in a more firm, predictable way, he'll back off. My office is filled, Brian, with parents who come in and think they've just got this tough kid. Just tough. And then if they make some changes, they say things like, wow, I don't know who I'm living with. This is a different child. No, it's not a different child. It's just who your child now is when you respond to him in a way that's predictable. Does he go to school? Does he go to school?
He does, and he does great at school.
Right, exactly.
He's never been in trouble. He's got a bunch of friends.
Exactly.
Respectful.
Where is all that stubborn difficulty at school?
Yeah, I know. It's you guys. Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're bad parents, not at all. I'm just simply saying, for whatever the reason, more and more parents are unable to minimize the amount of discipline that they have to do when they're faced with a kid who just melts down on them. You didn't give me what I wanted, I'm going to melt down on you. And I know what my wife would have done. I mean, we had 10 under 12 at one point. I know what my wife would have done. That candy would have been gone for who knows how long. And there would have been all kinds of consequences. You don't throw a major league fit when you're 8 years old out in public like that. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I got a book called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It's the most common discipline questions I get asked, ages 2 to 18, deals with all this stuff, deals with putting parents back in charge. It tells you 50 times more than I just told you. So go to my website, drray.com. It's signed. It's discounted. It's my most popular parenting book by far. So I think that'll help you an awful lot with this. God bless you, Brian. Thank you, sir. This is Dr. Ray.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
What is conversion? The Catholic Catechism says there are two kinds of conversions. The first is baptism, which removes original sin and washes away all other sin. The second is the conversion of the heart from sin to the merciful love of God. It is Jesus who calls us to this conversion. The time is fulfilled, he said. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. A perfect example of this conversion is St. Peter, who, after denying his master three times, burst into tears of repentance. St. Ambrose describes the two conversions as the water and tears, the water of baptism and the tears of repentance. Jesus' call to conversion is not first and foremost to outward penance, such as sackcloth and ashes, but to an interior conversion of the heart, without which penances are sterile and futile. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
Renee, I don't have time to take your call. Just go check into Matt Frad's material, F-R-A-A-D. Call me back and we could talk in more detail. Maureen has been waiting patiently. She's from Katy, Texas. I've spoken in Katy a number of times. Hi, Maureen.
Hello. Okay, my question is this. I have a 46-year-old divorced daughter one 10-year-old child. So she's had about 8 years to get an annulment and has talked about it, but has never done it. Now I'm hearing talk of a wedding. So my question to you is this. Do we tell her now, should you choose to marry this man, we won't be in attendance at your wedding, or wait until it comes up because it hasn't, he hasn't proposed yet, but I'm hearing talk about it, you know.
Has she kind of stayed somewhat within the Catholic Church during this time?
She still goes to communion, and her daughter's in Catholic school, but, you know, I wouldn't say she's a serious Catholic at all.
Okay, so she's kind of making her own Catholic
cafeteria.
Rules. Yeah.
Cafeteria.
At this point, if your conscience is telling you this is so totally against everything that the church teaches, and we can't oblige that, I would wait until it becomes definite. If she gets engaged to the guy and she has a date, then you tell her, because of our conscience, because of what we deeply believe, because of the fact that you're still married in the eyes of the church, and you're asking us to come and witness this, we can't do it. Now, Maureen, that said, if you do that, will you destroy the relationship with your daughter?
Yes.
That'll be it. She won't want any more to do with you.
Yes, correct.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow.
And probably I won't get to see the child.
Well, from what I've heard from a lot of priests, they have varying viewpoints on this. And it comes down to how much it would destroy completely the relationship. And if you say, yes, if we do not go, that's it. We will no longer see our grandchild. We will
correct.
No longer see our daughter. So what I would suggest you do is, I can't tell you what to do. I would suggest you talk to a priest about this and see that you're saying, we're struggling with this because obviously she's gone against what the church teaches, but apparently it doesn't bother her. And she thinks it's perfectly fine. So you have a decision to make here. If you say to yourself, no, our conscience says we cannot attend, then recognize that she'll probably react like you're afraid she'll react, and that will be the product of you making this decision.
If it were your child, would you attend?
I don't know. I was in a situation like that with my daughter. And fortunately, they got their marriage blessed, so then we could attend. It would be something where I would get some good spiritual guidance on this, maybe from more than one priest, and say, here's the situation. If we don't go, that's it. This relationship is done, and I don't see my grandkid. The priest may tell you, okay, you just quietly attend, and you let your daughter know that you're coming because she would be very, very upset if you didn't, but that you don't support the way she's kind of making her own Catholic rules.
Okay, and stop bringing up the annulment since you've had 8 years.
Give that one up. Give that one up. She's very clearly not going to do it.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, honey. Thanks. Bye. Ah, there's so much of that. It's just so much of when the church becomes inconvenient to me. When I just don't like the way they have a ruling about birth control, or a ruling about even abortion, or a ruling about divorce and remarriage. It's always sexual stuff. You notice that? Or marital. Then I'm not going to obey it. But I still go to church and I still go to communion because I want the benefits that I think I'm getting, even though that's even more risky moral behavior doing it that way. would probably be better if they didn't go to church and go to communion rather than living morally the way they wish in a serious dispute with the church's teaching and then gone to church and gone to communion anyway. Just piling one moral problem upon another. But that's the culture we now live in. It's especially is, well, the church ain't going to tell me what to do. I agree with her much of the time, but some of the time I don't. And when I don't, I'm the authority. Tough, tough attitude. Thanks for joining me. It's Dr. Ray, Walk with God and His Church.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.